What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station today on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Somebody in the text line says, what makes more money, Silver Dollar City or Dollywood?
I don't know.
Gotta be Silver Dollar City.
I don't know. I think Dollywood is more of a worldwide attraction than Silver Dollar City is, because everybody loves Dolly Parton, right? You go there for the Dolly Parton aspect.
American treasure. We'll say Silver Dollar City is better than Dollywood, having been to both, but it's just me. Preference.
Fire in the hole. I want to go to Silver Dollar City during Christmas.
Why? So next week.
Oh, the lights?
Or Branson or whatever.
Next week, September 1st is the rollout for that. And I'm not kidding, because I remember...
I think they have like an animatronic Norm.
You know, they had Peter Brady was...
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station today on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Is it not Peter Brady? Who was the oldest Brady? Greg Brady was down there performing, and he opened September 1st. And that was a Christmas episode, their Christmas stuff. Started like September 1st, I think, down there. So it's happening fast, couple weeks.
Somebody says from the 913 about the Swiftwood, this kind of crushes my plans for Frank Whitewood.
great exhibit at Frank Whitewood would be how to lose a team in 30 days.
September 30th, Jackson County. That's your day.
Is that the day?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I thought it was in August, but they pushed it back.
I think it's September down there.
I thought it was like August 26th or something like that. But what the hell do I know?
Mm. What we do know is from Pete Thamel sources, the Big Ten began populating an expanded college football playoff idea. Hopefully no one listens to the Big Ten, which would include 24 or 28 teams. It's just an idea at this point. End of sentence.
Mac, you're probably the biggest college football fan here.
Loves Morgan Wallen.
On this show, what do you think of a 24 or 28 team college football playoff? Because I think, quite frankly, it's too many damn teams.
Yeah, I hate it. Sucks. Way too many teams, man.
Hate it. Worse than the Simmons pick?
Yeah. No, I like the Simmons pick. But yeah, man, this is just ridiculous. What do I need to see an 8-win Nebraska team, name your 9-win whatever, Oregon, I don't know who it is, but you know what I'm saying. Like,
yeah,
I don't
sure.
need to see that. Like, I want more games on campuses. I want more college atmospheres, less neutral sites. I want more of the best teams, and that doesn't mean more teams. That just means the correct teams. Like,
right.
last year having Boise State in there and them hoes. Like, things like that, the system needs to change, but doesn't mean we need to add more teams.
I think you're right about that. I think the number of teams at 24 to 28 is way too big.
Way too much.
Way too many teams for a playoff, right? I think baseball and the NFL, quite honestly, have too many teams in the
Agreed.
Postseason at this point in time, because everybody's trying to figure out ways to make the regular season more valuable. Well, you got to make it more valuable, but you also are, by making the regular season more valuable, decreasing what the postseason is all about, and that's supposed to be a reward. We all know it's going to expand. We all know things are going to get bigger in sports. It's just the way it is. I would be fine with a 16-team playoff, but I want more games on campus. I heard Eli Drinkwitz last week talk about that, right? The Missouri head coach. And he's like, how great are these games on campus? We need more of that. I'll echo what he said last week. I would expand to 16, but let's do the first couple of rounds on campus sites and then do maybe your Final Four and championship game neutral sites if you want to do it, something like that. Because, you know, the NFL, we've got everything. What's going on?
These are the themes. Sorry. Okay.
It's the land of make-believe.
Yeah. With the NFL, we play every game at home. Baseball, we play every game at home. You know, all these other sports, we play everything at home until the Super Bowl, right? Why can't college football be the same way? Maybe you play everything on campus except for your national championship game.
I think the way you could do that as well is, like, you know, you're, if you do 16 teams, right? Your top four teams get byes. The next four teams host a game.
Sure.
Then you go to the other sites.
No, I would still continue to go with all the campus site games. I just think they're better. They're a lot more fun than those neutral, stale domes in Atlanta.
So you loved the Notre Dame Indiana game being in South Bend.
Yeah, I thought it was fantastic. I thought it was great.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
I think college football needs to lean into what makes it better than the NFL, which is a couple of things. It's just one or two things they have. The environment, the atmosphere, the tradition.
Yep.
That's it. Lean into that. You have that in spades over the NFL.
Yeah, you do. Really do. Show that. That is your number one strong selling point for college sports. Well, people love college sports because of the pageantry. It's not a better product than the pros. And for those who think college basketball is better than the NBA, buy a clue. I'll give you a quarter. They're not better. They're more pageantry. You probably have more of a tie because it's your alma mater, like I do with Ohio State. But I think a lot of times people are looking at college sports and keeping it on the same level as the NFL, and it's not. But the pageantry is much better than 95% of NFL venues that you roll into.
Well, then if you had, you know, more stages as a big, you'd see other players that maybe you didn't really necessarily watch a lot of. Like, how many people are actually watching Patrick Mahomes at Texas Tech?
Nobody.
Yep. 100%. You know,
and I mean, even Patrick Mahomes is really good in some games.
Hey, man, what did you make of Mahomes yesterday? Was that his best performance ever?
And happy Monday. But no, I think 16 is a good,
great number,
a good McNutt. I think that's a good number because you have eight that are off, eight that play, and then you start the next week. Plus, like 24, 28 teams. How much is that going to leak into?
Well, and that's the other thing. What are we doing here? Like, are we going to push college football back till, you know, the Super Bowl?
And you better not be getting the playoffs during the football playoffs, because then it really gets dicey.
But people don't really. I think college football has to be done by January 1st. That's just my opinion in all of this, right? You lose that kind of interest when you have 10, 12 days in between games and whatnot. So why can't we start the college football playoffs the Friday and Saturday after Thanksgiving and then have that as the first round? Then you have the next round. Then you have the next round.
Yeah.
And then you have your championship game right before Christmas.
How much do you concern with more college playoff games and teams to more players being like, yeah, not me?
What do you mean?
What do you mean? Like, say it again.
Not trying to get hurt. Trying to stay healthy for the draft and the combine and all that sort of stuff.
I think if you're in the playoff, you play. The bowl games, I get, I understand, they're not for anything. But I think if you're in the playoffs, you're part of that team, right? You're trying to achieve team success.
100%.
You're looking at me with bewilderment a little bit.
No, I'm with you. I'm just kind of thinking through it because...
But you could also say 24, 28 teams, but I really have a chance to win a championship.
I'm going to play that many more games.
Right.
But all my thing is, like, I was always pro-sit. But now you're getting paid the way you're getting paid. So,
oh, that's a great point.
So I'm sorry, you're playing. I'm paying you however many millions of dollars, and you mean this much to this program, and you make a lot of money, and so you're going to play now because you're an employee.
That's like, interesting because
there's pros and cons.
But I mean that's a really good point to bring up because how many of these guys that are getting millions are going to say I'm not playing in this meaningless bowl game because I got to save my NFL career, and the school goes, we just gave you $3 million. You are going to play in this game. Yeah, that'll be that's. Wow, that's a hell of a dynamic that I had not even thought about.
Money talks.
Yeah.
Speaking of money talks, Rich Eisen's returning to SportsCenter for the first time in 20 years.
Yep, cool.
Rich Eisen will anchor the 11 Eastern SportsCenter on Mondays ahead of the debut of the Rich Eisen Show, which is now on ESPN.
Well, when is the Rich Eisen Show going to be on? Because if he's hosting an 11 p.m. SportsCenter ahead of the debut of the Rich Eisen Show, is his show on at midnight now?
Yeah, 10 o'clock our time. If you're up at that late time, Mac, Rich Eisen will host that Monday.
I don't know.
I think it's just going to be just on ESPN, but at least he'll be part of it. It's like, you know, that's in the contract. Well, you got to host one show. All right, I'll do Mondays at 10.
But isn't that Scott Van Pelt normally?
That's what I was wondering. I guess SVP will be after that or before that.
Scott Van Pelt's like, oh, wow, I get a day off.
Exactly. Is it Monday the best day that you want to be Scott Van Pelt right after Monday Night Football?
That's true. Yeah, you have the Sunday
he's watching
Monday.
On Tuesday.
Yeah, no one cares about that. No. Man, that's cool. I love Rich Eisen. He's good. He's one of the good ones they've got.
Yeah, he's a good dude. Coming up on the other side, another good dude is we get to talk to Josh Vernier, who is our Royals insider tonight. 5:30 is a gigantic series against the Rangers. Of course, Vern will tell you, every series is gigantic at this point in this time of the season. 38 games left in the season. Royals, 2 games above .500, just come off a sweep for the White Sox. The one team that is below them is the Texas Rangers, who they have a 1.5-game lead on. You got 4 in Kansas City. Keep it rolling. Keep it hot. Keep it here on 96.5 The Fan, as our guy, Josh Vernier, joins us on the other side here on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
Hey, it's Michael Wacha, and you're listening to Fesco and Dusty on your home for Royals baseball, 96.5 The Fan.
Welcome back to Fesco and Dusty on your home for Royals baseball, 96.5 The Fan.
Longtime listener and supporter of you, because you tell it like it is.
Here's our Royals insider, Josh Vernier.
That's right. The sexiest voice in Kansas City, your Royals insider here on 96.5 The Fan, Josh Vernier, who will join you tonight at 5:30 as those Texas Rangers come to town. Vern, how about we do one word with you? One word on this weekend series against the White Sox.
Successful. Taking all three, keeping the Chicago White Sox a losing team. Unfortunately, you don't make up any ground in the wild card race, but they needed, and they still need to do something special. You know, taking 2 of 3 is the bare minimum moving forward in every single series. But they need to do something special after the hole they dug themselves in the month of June. And to sweep a team at the big league level, that's special. You know, to take 3 of 4 from the Texas Rangers, to me, that's a special series. You're going to need a few more sweeps. You're going to need to do a few more special things. And taking all three from the White Sox this weekend was certainly a successful 3-game stay.
Yeah, no doubt about it, man. I thought it was awesome to see him go out there and keep the losing team losing. But Vern, I think what also this shows, not just you, but I use the collective you, us, we, all of us, the four has not moved, as you mentioned. And you can go out there and sweep a team and still be in the exact same spot in the standings. As the games start to shrink and shrink and shrink and shrink, we're 4 back with 38 to play, essentially 5 back. So essentially you've got a magic number of 33 is kind of what we're looking at. That 4, man, that bothered the hell out of me that hasn't changed in like 6 months, I feel like.
Especially since every time you turn on the baseball highlights from around the game, you know, everyone's dumping on the Yankees for playing stupid baseball and for pressing and for, you know, another late season swoon from the Pinstripers. And, you know, you love to see that, and then somehow the Royals aren't making up any ground. Yeah, that's why, you know, dating back to right before the All-Star break, when they dropped 2 of 3 at home to the Mets, that was the moment where it was obvious, all right, it's no longer in the Royals' hands. They no longer control their fate. Now, they still, if they win, will find themselves there in the end, but they're going to need some external help from the Yankees, from the Guardians, and likely from some other teams. Listen, but you know, this is exactly what Major League Baseball wants. They wanted you know, half of the league to still believe they have a chance going into the final month of the season, and it's paying off in a majority of cities, I have to imagine, because I know Kansas City remains locked in. You know, pretty decent crowds this weekend. I can understand why yesterday took a little bit of a step back, as it was a billion degrees.
Oh God, yeah.
At first pitch, I don't think I've sweat in the last year combined as much as Luke Maley sweat behind the dish yesterday. I couldn't imagine being a catcher in Kansas City, which, seeing that I mentioned it, I heard you guys talking about Salvador Perez earlier, and you're right. He is, since the All-Star break, having a really good second half of the season. But if you look at that sample size, since they traded Freddie Fermin and Salvi's back to being a true starting catcher, starting 6 times, you know, 5 or 6 times a week in this brutal Kansas City heat, it is starting to affect his bat. He's hitting about .165 since they traded Freddie Fermin. Now, the power is still showing up on occasion, so it's only a slightly below league average OPS, but that's something to monitor here in the final 38 games, because for as good as Mike Yastrzemski and Adam Frazier have been, and they've been outstanding, you need that thump from Salvi to ultimately track down the New York Yankees. So I'll be interested to see how they handle the captain over the final 38, How much more do you want to see Luke Maley behind the dish? Tough to say, but you have to have a really good bat from Salvador Perez, especially if he's going to be hitting in that five spot. So another thing to monitor down the stretch.
Also, thanks to monitor, Vern, maybe the battery made of Salvador Perez once Seth Lugo. Have you noticed anything different maybe in the last five starts that hasn't quite been there throughout the regular season? Maybe he's, fatigued, maybe something, or it's just been a bad stretch of five games because the last start he had the grand slam in the five-run spot in the first.
Yeah. No, he's been bad really since the All-Star game. An ERA, I believe, around 7. Mm. 25 earned runs and 30 and a third innings. No, Seth Lugo's been just bad. The command's been bad. At times you're even wondering what's going on with the control, which obviously has you leaning towards one of two explanations. One is the finger injury that landed him on the IL earlier in the season, an injury that he said is going to be present until I get extended rest. And extended rest isn't going to happen until the off season. So, it's in there, but both Lugo and his manager push back quickly on that and say, I feel fine. It's not the finger. It's not a health issue. Okay. If it's not that, then to me, it has to be that you're tiring after throwing more than 200 innings last season. And basically outside of that quick stint on the IL, Seth Lugo's taking the ball every fifth day, but in conversations with Matt Quatrero, when they dive into the the data, the pitch data for Seth Lugo, there's nothing that screams this is a fatigued 36-year-old. So if they're not going to take any of those easy excuses, I'm not going to continue to give it to them. So bottom line, Seth Lugo needs to pitch better. He's disappointed in the second half. He knows it better than anybody. And he needs to earn that contract here down the final, 7-8 starts that he makes.
Yeah, it's easy to go with the low-hanging fruit and say, since he signed the contract, he hasn't been any good, but he hasn't. And also, since they traded Freddie Fermin, how much of a residual effect is that trade going to have on Lugo? Because his ERA is basically 2.5 runs per game better with Freddie Fermin behind the plate than with Salvi and with Luke Maley.
Yeah, and that also aligns with, when they traded Freddie's right around the All-Star break,
right,
which is when we've seen, Lugo really take a nosedive, while in the first half of the season he was outstanding. Some of it certainly has to do with Freddie. I'm not going to chalk up a majority of it to that, but Freddie Fermin was the best defensive catcher on this team, was the best game caller. I thought he did the best job of controlling the base running game. Salvi's a future Hall of Famer and a multi-time Gold Glover, so he's, no slouch, but, this is something, Bob, that we've been talking about for decades. Salvi, for as great as his bat is and for the improvements that he's made defensively, he's not the best game caller. He's not the best game caller. I think you saw that over the course of this homestand, the game where Carlos Estevez gave up a run in the ninth inning. I didn't like the pitch selection from Salvi and Estevez throwing that young man three straight changeups that ultimately cost him the game. You see what Freddie's doing out in San Diego, hitting well above 300, an OPS well above the league average. And again, this is a guy last year that finished top three for the American League Gold Glove as a backup catcher. So, no doubt about it, the impact of Freddie Fermin is going to be felt. And, that should be expected, especially when you see what Ryan Burkert is doing through his three starts. So to get 6 years of a 25-year-old pitcher that appears to not have a pulse when he's out there on the mound, just laconic as all get out, just very Cole Reagans-esque out there on the bump. You're going to have to give up something pretty good to acquire an arm like that. And we all know just how good Freddie Fermin is. So that's certainly been felt, but shoot, man, if Ryan Burger keeps pitching like this, I think we'll take that trade off.
You look at outside of the league, we heard the audio of Q on Cags, something's going to have to open up for him to get back up on this roster. Do you think he comes up when they do the expansion of the roster on September in that date, or do you think he just stays in AAA the rest of the year?
I think he'll be here September 1st. The issue right now is you don't need a right fielder. You have a right fielder. The platoon of Yastrzemski and Grichuk, Yastrzemski is so much better than anybody else defensively out there in right field, especially a rookie first baseman like Jack Caglione. So you don't need a right fielder. You don't need a first baseman with Vinny and Salvi. So to me, as of right now, with the roster being what it is without injuries, Jack Caglione's avenue to the big leagues is as a designated hitter. And the only way I'm bringing up a 22-year-old as a designated hitter, because also he needs to be in there every day. I'm not looking at Cags as a platoon player while he could be getting every day at bats down in AAA. The only way I'm bringing him up is if he's oozing with confidence. Right? If I'm going to say you don't need your glove, you're just coming up here to DH, man, oozing with confidence. And there's no way you can ooze confidence after just 1 week in AAA, especially after a hamstring injury and all of the struggles that he had at the big league level. You know, that's in the back of his mind. You know, you want those thoughts eradicated by the end of the season. That's why I think he will get up here and get a chance, because you want Jack Caglione going into the offseason knowing that those struggles he had in his first stint in the big leagues were all just a part of the process. You want him to see some success going into the offseason so he can hit the ground running in 2026. Yeah, I would say he'll be here September 1st, but I think he spends this week in AAA before the front office has a real conversation about possibly calling him up in a week from now.
And also, too, Vern, as Q pointed out, circumstances are different right now, right? You're in the middle of a playoff race. You're two games or whatever it is over 500. You're only four back of that final playoff spot. I don't see how you put Jack Caglione in the lineup right now. He's not one of your 26 best players. And how do you look at everybody else in that room and say, you know, Grichuk or Yaz or anybody from that nature, Frazier is getting, less at bats to give a guy who had 41 games, very small size, obviously, didn't produce. I think if you were out of it, I would have Cags back up here. But you're in it right now. You can't afford to waste at bats to get guys comfortable, if you will, going into next season. What do you think about that?
Yeah. Or to save face for the organization that made a decision to call up Jack Caglione earlier than many people expected and possibly costing themselves a year of service time. So there's also some, J.J. Piccolo, John Sherman, hey, we want to prove that the decision that we made was the right decision. So I'm sure there's a part of them that wants to save face. But yeah, you lose a clubhouse if you do something like that. If you put a guy like Mike Yastrzemski, you start giving him days off, even though in eight starts as the leadoff hitter, he has more walks than strikeouts in OPS north of 800. Adam Frazier's an everyday player now, and for good reason. He's batting .329 since joining the Royals. You know, Randall Grichuk just had his best day as a Royal on Saturday. Michael, Bobby, you're not moving those guys. Jonathan India, since being dropped in the lineup, has played eight games, has eight hits, half of them going for extra bases. No, I'm not saying that this team is set the way that the 2015 team was, where you knew the starting nine every single night, but Bobby, Vinny, Michael, Salvi, you know that's going to be your 2 through 5. I can't imagine moving Frazier or India out of that 6 or 7. You know, Yastrzemski up at the top, maybe you have, two spots open, the DH spot and maybe left field? Okay, so John Rave, by the way, since the All-Star game, has an on-base percentage of .365. I don't see where the at-bat is for Jack Caglione, let alone at-bats plural. So, keep finding that confidence down in Omaha, and when you fit in, you'll get in.
And also, too, Vern, guys who maybe deserve to have, seats on the bench aren't here anymore. Like, all these guys right now, in my opinion, deserve to be playing every day.
And the guys that are on the bench, thankfully, and with all due respect to them, that is their role. I mean, there were, throughout the month of May and June and July, there were so many times where you would look at the lineup and, you like Nick Lofton, you like John Rave, you like Tyler Tolbert, but these guys aren't someone that you necessarily want to see in the lineup four out of every six games. You want them mixed and matched and coming off the bench and platooned and whatnot. So Yeah, when you bring in the veterans of Grichuk and Frazier and Mike Yastrzemski, again, you're lopping MJ Melendez and Drew Waters and Michael Massey. These are the guys that are either coming off the roster or now need to fight to get back on the roster. Yeah, your 40-man roster, your 26-man roster, your organization became stronger and the competition ratcheted up. Now, in the offseason, we can talk about the decisions that were made last spring and the team building put forth and what we can learn from the early season struggles of the 2025 Royals. But once again, you know, for the second straight year, credit to John Sherman and J.J. Piccolo for not sitting on their hands and saying, well, not in the cards for us. No, they stayed aggressive. And, you know, for the questions I had about the decisions they made at the beginning of the season, as this team apparently lacked leadership, you know, credit to J.J. Piccolo for knowing his roster at the deadline and knowing exactly what they needed, because, boy, did he bring in some perfect pieces.
Speaking of those roster expansions on September 1st, Vern, do you think there's any sort of chance that Carter Jensen might get that call-up as well with Cags? Can I bring your buddy up and a little bit of support there as well, because he's been raking down there?
No, I don't. Okay. You only get one. Well, I guess you get two roster spots. Normally it's one pitcher and one position player, but I guess the Royals could bring up two position players and stay at 13 arms. No, I don't see that with Carter Jensen. Now, he's certainly had an outstanding season already with double-digit home runs since being promoted to AAA. You know, so long as Salvi and Luke Maley remain healthy, no, I think Jensen stays in AAA and takes just an immense amount of confidence into the offseason after, you know, going to the Futures game and realizing, man, I'm just as good as any of these guys and really stealing the show out there at the Futures game. To struggling early in the season at AA, Jack Caglione is promoted, and then all of a sudden you see Carter Jensen really start to take off, and it's been nonstop ever since then. No, I think he's going to take so much confidence into the offseason. He's one of those guys that I can't wait to lay eyes on next spring to see what that offseason work looked like as he prepares for his third big league camp working alongside Salvador Perez. In a camp that I would expect him to maybe come out with a spot on the opening day roster in 2026. So, now, to me, 2025's already been a rousing success for the 22-year-old from Park Hill. I think he has enough to go into the offseason and really catapult him to a breakout 2026.
Vern, when you look at this Texas series, I know Michael Walker on the hill tonight. Michael Walker has been fantastic in his last couple starts. Kind of seems to kind of be the guy that, you know, Q can give the ball to and just say, go eat up some innings and be successful doing so. Kind of have his, you know, work cut out for him tonight in this Texas game. But Walker, what has he kind of been to this team since the All-Star game?
Well, since opening day, yeah. He's been your most consistent starter. You know, for even while Chris Bubich was the All-Star and, you know, for the first half of the season was one of the 10 best pitchers in the sport. Throughout the season, Michael Walker's been one of the 20 best pitchers in the sport. And now that Bubich finds himself out for the season, Walker just continues to be, you know, in my time in big league clubhouses, I've never been around a more well-rounded professional as Michael Lorenzen as Michael Walker. I'm talking about the preparation, the way that he interacts with his teammates, the way that he fires the boys up, the way that he interacts with fans, with media, you know, the diligent work he puts in between starts, on start day. Big fan of Michael Walker. Just, you know, what you're describing is exactly why he's been able to last in this game for 13, 14 years. We could say the same thing about Salvador Perez. It's easy to take him for granted. And I've admitted that with Michael Walker. I take him for granted. But that just shows his greatness, is that every time he's on the hill, it's not even that I'm hoping that he gives the team a chance. And I'm not trying to jinx him here. But you just know he's going to give the team a chance to win. It might not always be pretty, but you're going to look up in the sixth inning and the game's going to be either the Royals up big or the Royals within one or two. Michael Walker to me has already run away with the Royals pitcher of the year. And if this team has any hopes of tracking down the New York Yankees, that must continue down the stretch, because we already talked about Seth Lugo. And even though Noah Cameron nor Ryan Berger look much like a rookie, they are rookies. So you know what? I'm fine putting the lion's share of the pressure in that starting rotation on the right shoulder and right arm of Michael Wacha.
It's interesting you bring Michael Wacha up for pitcher of the year, and we can have a debate on that, Vern. I mean, it's been 20 years. We haven't had a debate on who can be the pitcher of the year, because I was at Cameron with the way that he came up and pitched. He's been a pretty good candidate for that. But, you know, hey, it's awesome that we're in that category. 38 games to go. What does this team have to do to make it into the playoffs?
They still need, in my opinion, they still need to clean it up. You know, they still need to play a better brand of baseball. Now, the offense, thankfully, with the outstanding plate appearances you're getting on a nightly basis from Yastrzemski and Frazier, the offense has allowed this pitching staff, this defense, and this base running group some margin for error, right? They never had that in April, May, June, and July. So when the base running mistake by a Michael Garcia or a defensive miscue, when that was made, it would always come back to bite you. You would always lose that game because the offense could not muster together quality innings, quality at-bats, persistent pressure on the defense. And thankfully, you're seeing that now. But push comes to shove. We start getting towards the end of September. We get in these series against desperate teams like the Rangers, good teams like the Detroit Tigers. You're not going to be able to get away with those mistakes. So defensively and on the base paths, clean that up, because the pitching staff and the offense now, I think we feel pretty confident that these guys are going to do the job and give you a chance. So if the defense and the base running can look more like a Royals defense and base running unit, which it must, if that happens, I think this team can track down the New York Yankees. But it starts with the fundamentals. It always starts with the fundamentals with the Kansas City Royals. To me, the Royals will never make the playoffs unless they're an elite defense or an elite base running team. That's not just this year. That's for all time, so long as the structure of Major League Baseball remains the same. The Royals have to do the little things well, very well. Haven't really done that much this season. Hopefully we see that down the stretch of these final 38.
Vern, we know what everybody else says. Seattle's in Philadelphia. Boston's at home against the Orioles. The Yankees are on the road to Tampa Bay. Obviously, the Royals are here against Texas. But what do you have coming up at 5:30 tonight?
Well, on deck show action live from Kauffman Stadium with a pair of tickets to see Mike Trout and the Angels come to Kauffman Stadium in a few weeks. You can have a chance to win those tonight and tomorrow night and Wednesday night, as all three games are 6:40 first pitches leading into Thursday's afternoon tilt. But 1 hour before first pitch, your chance to win Royals tickets every game day on 96.5 The Fan.
There you go, Vern. Thursday, 82 degrees, humidity out of here. You might need a jacket instead of sweating.
Hallelujah.
Thank God. I mean? This past weekend, man, God left. Saturday, we were out there. It was brutal. I can't imagine. Tip of the cap to anybody who went to that game yesterday and sat in the 105-degree heat, man. Oh, my God.
Especially the parents.
Yeah.
And I saw a lot of kids out there, and I got to imagine that 7th, 8th, 9th inning and the drive home with those tired, hot kids was brutal.
Hey, I got a car of four of them that fell asleep after the Ty Myers concert, so I was good.
There we go. Vern,
man, they love.
Go ahead.
Do your daughter, a lot of young girls love that Ty Myers. I mean, I don't know if the Festo girls fall into that camp.
And let me tell you, every Johnson County High School kid was at that game on Saturday night. I'm not kidding.
They
knew everybody in that stadium. Everybody knew everybody in that stadium.
I had no idea who that young man
was,
but kudos to the Royals, because that's how you bring the kids to the yard. That worked out well.
I still don't know who he is, but the kids did, and it worked, man.
Yes, it did. Big crowd.
All right, Vern, stay hydrated, stay cool tonight as you dog this one out, and we'll be ready to go for Texas for four.
Sounds good, man. Appreciate it.
You got it. Josh Vernier there, our Royals insider. You heard it. 1 hour before first pitch, you have a chance to go see Mike Trout and those Angels for another sweep for the Kansas City Royals. But tonight, 6:40, Texas Rangers here on 96.5 The Fan. Coming up on the other side, who you rooting for, rookie-wise?
Who you rooting for?
That's not a chief. Who are you rooting for? 913-586-7965. We get to your responses, plus Max got a really good one that I'm kind of interested in why. Here on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
Fesco and Dusty. Subscribe and watch the show on YouTube by going to our channel at TheFan965. Kansas City's FM sports station, 96.5 The Fan.
Well, here we go. Back into it here on a Monday. 8:48 is what it says on our clock. But it is. Did you see Sean McDermott's comments about last night's game?
Well, how it was unacceptable that they lost 38-0 in a preseason game.
You didn't play your starters.
I mean, why is he even commenting on that? I had a tweet over the weekend that said something to the extent of the people who complain about the preseason games, the media, are the same ones breaking down five things I learned from the preseason game. You didn't learn squat from these games. Look at some of these backups. Nah, don't care.
I think you'll learn stuff from preseason game. I just don't think you'll know until the regular season.
Well, that's it. That's the thing. Yeah, that's a great point. I don't know what we're watching right now, but we may see something in the regular season where that guy played at one point. Yeah.
And 4 weeks we'll go, oh, yeah, I guess he was pretty good. Or, oh, yeah, he was really bad.
Yeah. These five things I learned in the preseason game about the Dolphins on Saturday night. Oh, you were the guy watching that game. Thanks.
Thank you
guys have a rookie that maybe doesn't play for the Chiefs or definitely does not play for the Chiefs that you're going to have your eye on all
Max
year?
Wanted to talk about this guy since last Wednesday. So go ahead, Mac. You can lead the way for us.
Let me tell you about this guy. It's Travion Henderson. Mm-hmm. I'm sold on this guy. He's got juice. You like Jahmyr Gibbs? This is Jahmyr Gibbs light. I mean, this is what he is. He's got burst, acceleration. He's their lead back.
New England?
His first touch. Yeah, New England running back. His first touch.
You got them winning the division, don't you?
I don't.
You're close, though.
I am
close.
Be
honest.
You're
close.
I'm hot on them. Yeah, I'm hot on them. This is a 10 or 11 win team. I think they're going to have a great defense. And his first touch 2 weeks ago in preseason was an 80-yard kickoff return for a touchdown. His next touch was an 8-yard run. His next touch was a 7-yard run breaking tackles. He had a touchdown run. Like, every time he touches the ball, you're just like, okay, I know I can't take a lot from preseason, but there's just too much to doubt this guy. I got him yesterday in my Dynasty draft. Bob, I'm excited, baby. Let's go.
Dynasty draft's a good place to get a guy like that, though. You know, you got
Young
him for
guy.
A couple of years and whatnot.
Exactly. And I already have Drake May in my Dynasty League, so I'm like, okay, if those work out.
Yeah, but what if they have a bye week at the same time?
I'll have to think about that. Yeah. That's fine. Just suck that week. It's okay. Just lose that week. It's all right.
You compared him to Jahmyr Gibbs.
Jahmyr Gibbs would be my comp.
Will we see the same? So, Fantasy Guy, 9 o'clock on Sundays here on 96.5 The Fan with Mac Morey.
Thank you.
Do you think that they'll do a little bit of the Detroit-style running game with Ramondre?
Ooh, with the cheese and on top.
Because Ramondre is a little injured, a little beat up. But he's still clearly their RB1.
He is. They paid him this
offseason. Henderson will be the backup or the second guy, and you'll see those numbers. Because you know what's going to happen. Your boy is going to go for, like, basically most of the drive, have, like, four or five rushes for, like, 35, 40 yards, get down to the five, Ramondre Stevenson gets the ball, touchdown.
That is a fair
hang on a second there. You said something that we need to back up on. It's very important. If we're ranking running backs by pizza styles, so that would be, like, whoever the running back is in New York would be number one because New York-style pizza is the best.
For sure.
The Detroit running back would probably be number two because I do find Detroit style to be the best. Very good.
Providence Pizza and Grandview, baby.
That's a good one.
Fire. Very good. So good.
They're really good.
Oh, yeah.
But is that like a national style of pizza?
Well, then nobody wants the Chicago running back.
Well, that's the thing. The Chicago one, man, like that's just like a fat guy.
DeAndre Swift, I believe.
Yep, DeAndre Swift.
What other we have like what other kind of styles of pizza am I forgetting? We have New York style, you have Detroit style, you have Chicago style.
Does Boston have their own pizza?
Not
or no?
really.
No.
Yeah. Not like that. Like you don't hear about Boston. So just those three, really, I guess.
Yeah, that's it. But yeah, Travion Henderson's mine. Real big explosion.
There you go.
Excited about him.
Bobby?
Don't
real
make
big explosion?
After that real big explosion, I just don't know that I can go on.
I've been pounded this week.
I mean, my God.
I've been pounded this week.
Mine is Abdul Carter of the Giants. They got a really good defensive line. He may be the best rusher on that defensive line right now. So I'm excited to see. Again, I'm tempering everything because it is preseason, and we don't know how many, you know, as Ben Maller called them the other day, how many future DoorDash drivers we have on the offensive line that the Giants have been going against, and how many future bouncers are on those offensive lines. But so far, so good. I'm excited about Abdul Carter. I thought he was the best pass rusher coming out of the draft, and I'm stoked to watch that guy play.
I know that I'm hard.
Mm-hmm.
You want a good laugh?
Yeah.
Top text. They don't have a team, but St. Louis-style pizza would be the worst running back in the league.
Thank you. Yes, I know. There's no question. Yes. BBL stinky.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to take the low-hanging fruit, man. I'm excited to see Ashton Jeanty.
Yeah. In the Applebee's commercials or on the field?
Yeah, if you didn't see that, him and Dan Campbell are going to collab with Applebee's.
Have you seen the commercial yet?
Is it funny?
Mm.
Okay.
I'm a little disappointed. I think they misuse Ashton Jeanty.
Okay. I'll have to watch it.
But no, because last year, I think a lot of people thought that, you know, maybe he wasn't looked at as good as he was at Boise State. The Raiders took him with their first pick. We know that the upside is high. We know that he's what, ADP? He's first round pick, man. He's like ADP, I think right now is like 10th.
Yeah, he's like, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, yes. Like
wow. top 10 overall. Pick on average.
I know. Because everybody goes, well, who are they going to throw to in Vegas? Well, yeah, Brock Bowers, and then who?
Yeah.
Jacoby Myers is it.
You're going to have Geno Smith. We know what they did in Seattle with Pete Carroll. They like to run the ball. Yeah. There's a lot of similarities to the Marshawn Lynch style of run that Ashton Jeanty is, because he's not that, you know, Jahmyr Gibbs, Bijan Robinson, fast, electric. He's just going to get the ball, hit the hole, and just go downhill. And Pete Carroll loves that style. So I'm interested to see if he can incorporate that.
He is their biggest weapon, I guess.
Out of Brock? Yeah, I mean.
Outside of Brock,
and
yeah.
And you think about how they can, you know, collab in that system, because there's a good running back in the Chargers system as well.
He's
also a rookie out of North Carolina.
But so I think his successes could lead to success for Geno, though, too.
Correct.
Like, take that kind of pressure off of Geno Smith of having nobody to throw to. And if you're running at 4 yards a clip, you don't need your quarterback to be that good. You can just, you know, move the ball down the field at a slow pace, keep the other offense off the field, obviously. But you could do it that way in this league.
100%. They don't have an offensive line to do it. That's what I'm worried about. The Jeanty, as far as fantasy is concerned, that's why I'm a little bit like, first round, that offensive line's rough. I'm just concerned about that part of it.
I am excited to see if these Applebee's commercials evolve.
Okay.
Campbell was great. So Ashton Jeanty's in it.
Okay.
Wait, replacing Saquon Barkley, I guess, was in it last year, if I'm not mistaken,
I feel like that's
right. His probably fee went up.
They said,
we need you to jump backwards over this table. I'm out. So they got Jeanty, and he like grabs the order sheet from Dan Campbell and runs through the Applebee's with this long order sheet. I need to see it with the audio. I needed to see him trucking people, though.
Yeah.
Right? Like servers with wings and things.
And mozzarella sticks flying. Yeah, absolutely.
You need that. Yeah, you need that in that commercial. So we don't have that yet, so I'm hoping it's an evolving of commercials, like a series over the years, like Dr. Rick.
You saw him truck someone this weekend, though, right?
Yes.
That was nice. Now we had a text as well about your guy, Abdul Carter. You see him get blown up by a tight end chip block? Welcome to the league, bro.
I don't watch preseason football all that much, no.
Neither does Sean McDermott, apparently. Just devastated. Some people said Luther Burden and Cam Ward. Luther Burden looked good last night.
Luther Burden looked great.
From what I saw.
Yes. See, this is what's so hard about this preseason stuff. There's all these guys we're saying looking good. Probably none of them will look good in the regular season, right? Because you don't know what other teams are doing.
You don't.
And you don't even know what that team's doing.
I will say with the Luther Burden thing, Greg Olson probably said a little too much last night. He was like,
what's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station today on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Talking about what Ben Johnson had gave us about Luther Burden. Basically, he said to us that Ben Johnson told him that Luther Burden's going to be better than both DJ Moore and Rome Odunze. So I was like, whoa, cool.
Okay.
They're probably not supposed to let us know that, but thanks.
Sure they are. That's hype. That's how you hype
think? Okay.
Oh, absolutely. That's planted on purpose. Get people excited about this guy. You know, that's what it is. It
made me excited.
We'll get into an NFL narrative in 365 days. Plus, we'll get into the NFLPA's messy situation with the effect of Rashee Rice's situation. All of that next here on your home for the Kansas City Chiefs, 96.5 The Fan.
Hey, it's Bobby Witt Jr., and you're listening to Fesco and Dusty on your home for Royals baseball, 96.5 The Fan.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station today on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.